This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Wednesday afternoon, March 6th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. Restaurants in Chicago seeing an increase in demand for late-night dining. We'll talk about the trend in our next segment, but right now we're hearing from Fed Chair Jay Powell today, ahead of the government jobs report for February, which comes out Friday morning. We're joined by Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Gus, thank you for joining us today. And no real surprises coming from Chairman Powell as he made the rounds on Capitol Hill.
That's correct. Chair Powell reiterated what was in the previous FOMC statement at the end of January. He said that the Fed does expect to cut the Fed funds rate sometime later this year, that they don't need to wait until inflation gets to 2%. But there certainly looks like they're not going to do it in their next meeting in a couple of weeks.
The private payrolls report came out today from ADP showing that the number of new jobs increased by 140,000 in the month of February. So that means either there was a contraction in the government report coming out on Friday, or we'll see a number like 700,000. The private and the public payrolls report, they never really agree.
That's right. And I think post-COVID that there's been a wider divergence between the ADP report and the BLS employment report. I do think that the BLS report is more accurate. And I'd expect to see job gains of around 210,000 when the Bureau of Labor Statistics releases the jobs report on Friday. That's a very good number, slower than what we saw in January. But the economy can't continue to add jobs at that January pace of better than 350,000 per month.
We're going beyond the numbers with Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. And that's simply just a function of sampling rates. ADP's methodology is different than the BLS methodology, and that's how they arrive at different conclusions.
That's right. And we see revisions to the BLS numbers over time as they get more accurate data and so forth. So I think what we can say is that businesses continue to add jobs at a pretty solid clip. Job growth has slowed over the past couple of years, but it's still stronger than the Federal Reserve would like. They would like to see a bit softer job growth and a bit more slack in the job market.
And speaking of slack in the job market, the JOLTS report, the JOLTS number is out, which really is more of a snapshot of how much movement is taking place inside the job market, how many people are quitting their jobs and moving on to something else, and just how many openings are out there.
That's right. And what we see is that business hiring is a little bit softer than it has been. On the other hand, layoffs remain extremely low. Businesses are concerned about that if they lose workers, they're going to have difficulties in replacing them. And then finally, we see that what we call quits, workers quitting their jobs, is also slowing. It's still elevated. So what overall this means is that businesses aren't hiring as much, but they're certainly not laying workers off, and that workers are less likely to leave their jobs for other opportunities elsewhere, and that's a sign that conditions in the labor market are stabilizing after the very strong job growth that we've seen since the pandemic.
It also sets up a situation where even if there is a downturn, that in lieu of laying people off, the businesses that have these 8 million or so job openings will just simply take them down.
That's right. And there are, you know, job openings remain very high, although they are falling somewhat. But I think if demand softens, that businesses will just say, we're going to make do with the workers that we have. We won't hire anymore. That would contribute to slower job growth. But I think overall, the labor market should remain strong throughout 2024.
Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, an update on Chicago's late night dining scene.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Hour continues.
Chicago restaurants are seeing an increase in customers looking for a late-night dining experience. Let's take a closer look with Ali Marotti, restaurant and retail reporter for Crane Chicago Business. Ali, thank you for joining us today. And for purposes of this segment, how do we define late-night dining? Because I think a lot of people have different pictures in their head.
Yeah, that's a great question. So for this story, I focused on kind of like 9 p.m. and after, and I was talking more about dining and not so much the club scene. So not exactly the 4 a.m. bars, basically.
And we're not talking about the places that used to be open 24 hours, the golden nuggets of the world, where you could go in and grab some breakfast and a cup of coffee, either as you're starting or ending your day.
You're right. These are more upscale restaurants where you're going, you're sitting down, you're having a meal that is full meal and maybe a nice cocktail, more wine, that sort of thing. Tasting menus in some situations.
And how did this market unfold for people who, let's say, instead of dinner and a show, it's a show and dinner downtown?
Yeah. So basically during the pandemic, we saw people completely change their behavior, right? So we went from everything being locked down and for most of 2020 and even into 2021. And then when restaurants started reopening in 2021, 2022, kind of getting their groove back, diners were eating dinner a lot earlier. And then they were kind of just going home. They weren't going to multiple places. They weren't doing a dinner and a show or a dinner and cocktail somewhere else. It was kind of just go to dinner, go home, call it a night. So what we're seeing now is people booking these later reservations, and restaurant owners tell me they started seeing that last fall. And so what they're doing to capitalize on that is rolling out all these different offerings from, you know, late night happy hours that start at 9 and go till midnight to even tasting menus that are like different for late night and don't start until after 10 p.m.
And is this across Chicago, or is this mainly for restaurants that are downtown in the Loop, River Northwest Loop, the hot spots, for lack of a better word?
This is across Chicago. You know, I talked to a restaurant in Lincoln Park called John's Food and Wine that recently opened, and the owner told me he came up recently from his basement office at 11:30 and was expecting quiet because the restaurant typically closes at 11, and he was met with a deafening roar. You know, I even talked to Bronzeville Winery down in Bronzeville, and they are thinking about rolling out kind of like a late night lounge situation starting when the weather warms up that would target people that, you know, maybe they finish dinner at 9 or 10 and they don't want to go home quite yet. So the mood will shift into something that's a little bit loungier, a little bit more music focused with elevated bites, that sort of thing.
It sounds like some of these restaurant owners are surprised that we're 3 years into reopening and that the restaurant clientele, they still want to make up for that, those 12 months of lost living.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, it's interesting. I think they're definitely pleasantly surprised because even though restaurants were only closed, you know, the main closures ended in 2021, right? A lot of them have continued to struggle. Restaurants are a notoriously low margin industry. So as we've seen food costs and labor costs go up in the past few years, they've seen their margins shrink even more. So if you can get people to stick around and stay out for a few extra hours and order, you know, a high margin menu item like a fancy cocktail, that just means more profit to their bottom line.
Now, does this mean that, just in the interest of balance here and representing people like me, because Allie, I gotta eat at 4:30 and go home and watch the Golden Girls. Does this mean that the earlier dining options will go away?
No, I don't think so. You know, what I'm hearing from them is that one of the reasons they're able to do this beyond the customer demand is that some of the labor shortage issues that the restaurant industry have struggled with over the past 2 years are starting to ease a bit too. So they do have people that can, you know, now work and stick around to serve during those extra hours that they add on. And, you know, they seem to be just that. They're extra hours. The places that are adding late night happy hours are not doing away with their regular happy hours, for example.
Ali Moradi, restaurant and retail reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, examining the impact of a struggling commercial real estate market on the economy.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The scuffling commercial real estate market is posing threats to the markets and the economy. Let's examine the impact with Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager, MacroTides.com, based in San Diego. Jim, thank you for joining us today. And the commercial real estate market has been under stress for almost 4 years now. We're coming up on the fourth anniversary of a lot of offices converting to remote work because of the COVID-19 pandemic. There has been some return to office, but there's still a lot of empty buildings out there.
Yes, there is, Rob. And Powell, Chair Powell, is testifying before Congress today. Was asked about the commercial real estate problem. He said it would take years, but it would be manageable. I will note that back in May 2007, Chairman Ben Bernanke of the Fed at that point in time was asked about subprime housing problem, and he said it was manageable and was likely to be constrained. I think that is causing a lot of complacency, Rob, in financial markets. I think the problem is going to wind up being a little bit worse. I have an in-depth report that I just put together. If any listener would like to get more detail about this potential issue, jimwelshmacro@gmail.com, and I'll be happy to send that out. So the problem that you're talking about, vacancy rate hit 19.6%. It's the highest in data going back to 1979. And that problem is going to persist, Rob, as you know, employees resist going back into the office. So a solution on that front isn't going to happen quickly.
The short version of this crisis is that banks are holding the mortgages on an office tower, and you get revenue, you pay off that mortgage from leasing it up from all 90 floors, for lack of a better example, and that's how you pay your mortgage, is that you have all this space is leased out, and they're paying you. If that lease revenue is not coming in and you're left holding the bag, what happens after that?
Well, you wind up having to bring in more money in all likelihood, Rob, because the loan to value, for instance, if property was bought for $10 million, the company probably put in $8 million. But according to recent analysis, office buildings have lost about 35% of their value. So instead of it being worth $10 million, it's worth less than $7 million. So when that loan comes up for renewal, the banks are going to say, hey, bring in some more money. And, you know, that could be a real problem. So I think until we see more and more of these loans come due, Rob, people can kind of pretend that this isn't a big problem. But I think over the next 2-3 years, we have over $1 trillion worth of commercial lending coming due. And this isn't just the problem isn't just related to office buildings alone. According to a recent report, 14% of all loans are underwater relative to the loan amount. So this is a bigger problem than just office buildings, but that's where it's most acute.
And then very quickly, we talked about the housing crisis 2007-2008, the bad mortgages, the subprime market, and that almost brought down the entire economy 16 years ago. What level of exposure are we talking about here, and will it happen all at once?
Things always take a little bit longer, and then they happen all at once, as that famous quote goes. I think the difference is that the problem in 2008 was really contained by housing. Banks are facing a lot of problems besides just commercial real estate. We've seen the default rates on car loans, credit card delinquencies, and so forth. Are all moving up aggressively, Rob. So I think the problem is going to be broader. Plus, a lot of banks are holding government securities, and those have lost a significant amount of their face value. So this report I mentioned earlier goes into great detail about all these points. And I think it's, as I said, I'm not saying it's going to be like 2008. I just think it's going to be a bigger problem than most people realize at this point in time.
Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager, MacroTides.com in San Diego. Thank you for joining us today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley suspends her campaign for president. The head of the Chicago Police Union reacts to the verdict in the Officer Ella French murder trial. It's Personal Finance Wednesday. Credit scores fall for the first time in a decade. We'll tell you how you can boost yours. Spring is not only a hot time for home buyers, it's also for people shopping for a car. Business. The markets are higher. The Dow is up 208 points, NASDAQ up 180, and the S&P 500 up 47. We have 46 degrees right now under mostly sunny skies at 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. Former Ambassador Nikki Haley is bowing out of the battle for the Republican presidential nomination after winning just one state, Vermont, on Super Tuesday.
I said I wanted Americans to have their voices heard. I have done that. I have no regrets. And although I will no longer be a candidate, I will not stop using my voice for the things I believe in.
Haley made the announcement this morning in her home state of South Carolina. Donald Trump is now the presumptive Republican nominee. On the Democratic side, Minnesota Congressman Dean Phillips announcing just a couple of minutes ago that he is suspending his Democratic primary campaign for president. The leader of Chicago's Maine Police Union is responding to the guilty verdict in the 2021 murder of Chicago police officer Ella French. 23-year-old Amante Morgan was convicted on all counts against him, including charges of murder and attempted murder. This is Fraternal Order of Police President John Catanzara.
This is one first-degree murder conviction. There should have been a second one. But unfortunately, politicians down in Springfield passed the Safety Act, which eliminated felony murder. Or Eric Morgan would also be facing life in prison for a first-degree murder charge.
French's partner, Officer Carlos Yanez, was critically wounded but survived. Dumonte Morgan's brother, Eric, was handed a 7-year sentence for his role in the shooting. It's 12:32 as the Noon Business Hour continues. Markets are gaining ground today. Let's see what's moving Wall Street with Jeff Kilburg, founder and CEO of KKM Financial, based in Chicago. Jeff, thank you for joining us today. Let's start off with Fed Chair Jerome Powell's comments on Capitol Hill. He is speaking there today and tomorrow, and no surprises from the chairman so far. And has that already been priced in?
You know, Rob, you're absolutely right. There have been no surprises. Interesting to see how close to the vest Fed Chairman Powell is really having these press conferences on Capitol Hill. And the one takeaway, which the market seemingly does not care about, but the one takeaway is that maybe the Fed only has one or two interest rate cuts this year. Maybe they don't have any interest rate cuts due to the fact that they are comfortable with the way inflation is moving, but they still want to hold rates longer and not be premature in moving rates lower. So it has been interesting to see, but the markets, yes, we had a little bit of a sell-off yesterday, the first time probably in 18 weeks. The market is back rip-roaring, and NVIDIA almost at $900. Yet again, that is the leading surge, the AI darling that is.
And this is a story from last year, but it seems that more banks are under stress, and the latest one is New York Community Bank Corp. Shares falling 40% today amid reports the bank is seeking a cash infusion. What are just some of the things that are weighing on these smaller, more regional banks?
I think there's a couple inputs there, but that is a problem. The market right now is not recognizing or seemingly watching that New York Community Bancorp stock go down. It's actually down 81% year to date. But they're going to seek a capital infusion. If we rewind to that theme of those regional banks, Silicon Valley Bank, First Republic, which both failed and needed cash rescues from the Federal Reserve, that is something that could move the VIX higher and could move equities lower short term. But I think the input is all these loans out there. We're seeing retail and office space in these big cities not come back, not recover from COVID. So those loans out there, which are now tied to market valuations, those market valuations are nearly 25 to 35% lower. So those loans are really weighing on the books. So someone has to take a haircut. It sounds like the New York Bancorp shareholders are the ones taking it down 81% year to date.
Between the stress that the commercial lending space is under right now, just because of these empty office buildings, and because of the stress that a lot of these smaller regional banks are dealing with just because of interest rates, is this a near-term or long-term threat to the economy?
I think it's a near-term threat to the markets. I don't think to our economy. The economy is still very strong. You're seeing the consumer, which drives two-thirds of the U.S. economy, still in a very strong position. But this is a problem, and you can see these problems really escalate and move quickly. The VIX could pop above 20, and you can see a little bit of profit taking, because the S&P 500, if you think about it, has had just a tremendous run from November, December, January, and February. Those are the best 4 months we've seen in decades. We've seen new all-time highs in the S&P 500, and we've also seen the NASDAQ. So there could be some buttoning down the hatches here if that New York Bancorp situation really, really gets out of control.
Back on the interest rate discussion, Powell has been very adamant that the 2% target is sacrosanct. There's a lot of discussion of data dependency, but they want to get to that 2% figure. And already we see that inflation is in the 2% range. Does it have to be 2% exactly on the nose for a period of time before they start even talking about cutting interest rates?
Oh, Rob, we're not going to start believing what the Fed actually says. No, it's been decades they've been lying to us. So I think they're going to continue to move the goalposts. But that is the stance they are taking. Let's just rewind to the fall of 2021 when they talked about the inflation being transitory. So they're always going to be behind the curve. But I think what he's trying to do is put themselves in a position. It's an election year. They're not going to cut rates in this fall. So if they're going to do it, they're going to do it in June, or they're going to have to wait till January. So he's kind of setting the stage for maybe no interest rate cuts this year, which would be problematic for the expectations of equity markets.
And speaking of a lack of surprises, it sounds like the primary campaign for president is done. It will be a rematch of Trump versus Biden. And when do the financial markets really start to pay attention to elections, especially when it's between two known quantities?
It is seasonal, but I think we are in a situation where we're not going to get a reaction on the equity markets probably until closer to that September, October, right before the actual election in November. So I don't get political, Rob. You know that. I think markets are going to try and find a way to be agnostic as well up until that moment in time, where policy does matter and also does shape the economy moving forward.
Jeff Kilberg, founder and CEO of KKM Financial in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, help in bucking the trend of lower credit scores.
Discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday, and for the first time in 10 years, the average credit score is declining, and that can impact multiple areas of your financial life. Let's get some help from Ted Rossman, Senior Industry Analyst, Bankrate.com in New York. Ted, thank you for joining us today. And what are, when we talk about the average credit score declining, what is the extent of that decline?
It was a very slight decline from an average of 718 to 717. So still in good shape overall. The main reasons were a slight uptick in credit utilization, like how much of people's available credit they're using, especially on credit cards, and a slight uptick in delinquencies. I think what's most important, though, is what plays out at the household level, because that's where the rubber really meets the road. You know, some people, their credit score has gone down considerably because maybe they've lost their job, they've fallen behind, they've taken on a lot of debt. I think sometimes that's a little bit shrouded at the macro level. The macro picture is still pretty good.
And then when we talk about how you can improve your credit score, it's not just simply your it doesn't just merely govern the interest you pay when you apply for a mortgage or apply for a car loan or for a credit card. It really does govern a lot of areas of your life above and beyond lending.
Your credit score is so important. I mean, it goes a long way toward determining whether or not you're approved for financial products. It affects the interest rate you'll pay. But it's not just loans. You know, as you noted, it's other things. It's an apartment lease. It's having to get utility service and a cell phone plan without having to put a deposit down. Even some employers check credit reports. So it's very important. The general rules of the road are pay your bills on time, keep your debts low, and show that you can successfully manage various types of credit over the long haul.
We're talking improving your credit score with Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst with Bankrate.com in New York. What are some ways that you can clean up your credit report, or at least conduct some spring cleaning on your credit report, since spring is in the air in March?
A lot of it is more of a marathon than a sprint. It's that kind of lather, rinse, repeat of pay on time, keep your debts low, things like that. There are some things you can do quickly, though. A few ideas. One would be look for errors. The FTC says about 1 in 5 Americans have errors on their credit reports. So go to annualcreditreport.com, pull your reports for free, get any mistakes cleaned up. You can also seek to lower your credit utilization ratio. So credit you're using divided by credit available to you, especially on credit cards. Maybe consider making an extra mid-month payment to knock that statement balance down, because that's usually when it gets reported to the bureaus. So make an additional payment. It's not enough just to pay in full at the end of the month. You want that balance to be as low as possible. You could consider asking for a higher credit limit to influence the other side of that ratio. One other tip is to sign up for alternative credit monitoring programs such as Experian Boost, which can give you credit for things like paying your streaming services and cell phone bills on time. Certain rent payments are included. These are things that don't go into the standard credit scoring formula.
And on top of that, that could also be a tool for you if you don't utilize a lot of credit. Let's say you rent and you're just starting out and you want to build that credit profile. It sounds like a good way to do it.
It's a great way to get started. Yeah. Another way to get started is to piggyback off a parent's credit card. If you're a teenager or someone in your 20s, maybe get on a parent's credit card as an authorized user. You can use that to jumpstart your credit journey, or even start with a very safe product like a secured credit card where you put down a deposit that serves as the credit line. Maybe it's a couple $100 or something like that. These are all ways to get your foot in the door, because it's kind of like getting job experience, right? Like, it takes credit to get more credit.
Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst with Bankrate.com in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday, and still to come, the latest on the spring car buying market.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's been a volatile couple of years for the automotive industry, much of that due to the effects of the pandemic. Let's get an update on the market this spring from Matt Jones, spokesman for TrueCar in Los Angeles. Matt, thank you for joining us today. And it's interesting just looking back, Matt, on the turbulence in the automotive space over the last couple of years as the big car makers had to deal with a lot of supply chain issues. One example, Matt, and that is my mother-in-law, who bought a Buick about a year and a half ago, had to take him back to the dealer to get those chips installed because the car was done, but the chips were on back order. So that just goes to show you that it was a disrupted market for a good long time there.
Yeah, absolutely. But the good news is it looks like, for most Americans, that disruption is a thing of the past. Inventory is getting back to normal levels, and people are able to go to dealerships and check out a couple of different cars and look at different colors, and things are going to feel a lot more normal. Much more than they have in the past 5 years, that's for certain.
And one thing it seems like that has kept a lot of people off the sidelines because of those supply chain issues is that belief that if you go to the dealership, you may not get the best price for a vehicle. You could be paying inflated prices compared to pre-pandemic or now. If you do go to a dealership, what kind of a deal are you going to get? I mean, what is like the average price of a car right now, and how does it stack up to before?
Well, that's a really interesting question. The average price of a new car right now is still somewhere in the $47,000 range. Now, that number seems really, really high, but it doesn't mean that there's not cars that are less than that. What it means is there's a lot of people buying very expensive cars, which is artificially pulling that average price up. But there are still cars that people can buy in the, you know, in the mid-20s and in the low 30s. So prices are becoming a little bit more normal. But what consumers are most concerned about is, are they able to get discounts and is affordability there? And those, you know, oversticker markups, those are by and large a thing of the past. Cars are being sold for MSRP or below. The great majority are being sold for below MSRP. But the one thing to keep an eye out, even though, you know, discounts are back and rebates are back, the one thing to keep an eye out for is interest rates, and that's causing a lot of pressure on people's budgets.
Yeah, I was going to ask, if you want to finance a car, you're still dealing with an elevated interest rate environment, maybe 5 or 6% as opposed to before, and that will impact your budget. So once you think about how much you can afford and you figure out how much you can finance, if you're going down the financing route, maybe have a approval in hand before you walk into the dealer, what are some things you can do if you want to buy a car this spring?
Well, so I think one of the things that people really should be looking at is questioning their own brand loyalty. Traditionally, people who bought a Honda bought another Honda. They had a Ford, they bought another Ford. But we've seen over the pandemic and because of the shortages that it's actually maybe not a bad idea to switch between different brands and check and see what the competitors are doing, because we're seeing a lot of these, you know, forgive the language, upstart brands like Hyundai and Kia taking huge market share. I think Hyundai is now the number four biggest seller in the United States, which was something that would have been unheard of 10 years ago. But it's not because their product is bad. I mean, people are buying it in droves. So if you haven't considered brands like Hyundai, Kia, Nissan, Subaru, it might be time to look at it, even when you have your budget in place. Because what we're finding is some of these newer brands or these emerging brands are offering a lot of value, and they're calling it, you know, high value packages, which are really going to be appealing to a lot of Americans. So don't stick with what you know necessarily. Look and see what else is out there.
Magic.
The second.
Go ahead. Give me that second thing before we head out of here.
The second thing is understand that you are going to pay a higher interest rate. So maybe plan on paying a little bit more per month if your budget allows, so that you can pay off that car sooner and get away from those overall interest charges.
Matt Jones, spokesman, TrueCar in Los Angeles. Thank you for joining us today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.